Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market blog, which I will post a link to below this interview. Mark, let's start off with the jobs data that came out today out of the U.S. A pretty big jobs data miss here as August payrolls grew 235,000. Big miss from the estimate of over 730,000. Now, there was an upward revision to the two prior months of 134,000, but still, overall, this miss in jobs data is causing some market volatility here. We'll get into that market volatility, but when it comes to the actual data here, what caught your eye, Mark?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, obviously, with the headline, non-farm payrolls really missed forecasts. But I'd make 3 points. One is that the Federal Reserve has made it clear that when it comes to inflation, there's one number that captures price pressures, PCE deflator. But they say when it comes to the employment, when it comes to the labor market, the employment metrics, they need more than just one. And so we want to make sure we keep that in mind, that we don't focus just exclusively on one element. But what you do say is true. Non-farm payrolls was a terrible miss. That said, other details of the report were better. And among those that caught my eye was not just that the unemployment rate fell from 5.4% to 5.2%, but also the underemployment. I know there are people who maybe have to take a part-time job because they can't find a full-time job. That also fell even more from 9.2% to 8.8%. But what's not going to be seen in the newspapers or the most write-ups about it are some other details that I think inspire the Federal Reserve and will not necessarily mean that the jobs data detracts them from tapering. First, you know how the jobs data is really a function of two surveys, an establishment survey, and that's where we get the non-farm payroll number from, and then the unemployment rate, which really comes from the household survey. And so while the establishment survey showed only, as you mentioned, 235,000 jobs, the household survey found 509,000 jobs. Secondly, that I would point out, and I should say about that household survey, what it picks up that the non-farm payroll numbers doesn't. Part-time workers, self-employed. So that's an important thing to keep in mind that's not picked up by the non-farm payrolls. But the other element that caught my eye, which I think is also catch the Fed's eye, because they also are concerned not just about the month-to-month number, but the participation rate, is that the participation rate for what people regard as the prime employment age, I think it's 16 or 18 to 60, and that, or 65, and that participation rate went up 0.2% to 78%. That's also a healthy sign. So I think that on balance, I'd say the employment data was mixed, but what's going to catch the headlines is the miss on the non-farm payroll number itself, only about a third of what it had been.
What about that jump in hourly earnings, too, Mark? Bringing that whole inflation argument back into context. The hourly earnings jumped 0.6% month over month. That was double the estimate. What's your takeaway from that? Is there anything noteworthy we need to be watching there?
Yeah, I think there's two elements going on there. One, of course, is that and many businesses from McDonald's to Walmart, many businesses that hire a lot of have a lot of low-paid employees have said they're boosting wages. So it's one thing we know that there is some upward pressure on wages, and you see a lot of anecdotal reports of this as well. But there is something else going on that has to do with the composition of the workforce. So, for example, in this past month, partly what happened is that those people who are employed in, say, restaurants and bars, 42,000 less jobs. In the hotel sector, I want to say there was like about 34,000 fewer jobs. And so as those low-paid jobs drop out, so what I'm really trying to point out just is really thinking about the composition of the labor force that also impacts those wages. But you are right that that would be another element of strength from the report. From a Federal Reserve's point of view, would be the increase in hourly earnings. And also with that is the hours worked. The index of hours worked, which is really, you know, that's really what productivity, that's really what output is. How many people are working is sort of like how many hours are being worked and productivity. And hours worked also increased. So that's also a positive sign. So I wouldn't, I think, yes, it's a miss. So the last thing I would point out that's also not going to be in the newspapers tomorrow is that the August number, for some reason, the government has a tough time estimating it. And in 11 out of the past 12 years, it gets revised up. And so that's also a good caveat just to keep in mind that this is the high frequency number subject to revisions. And just like investors, policymakers are probably not going to put a lot of stock in it. It's just part of the general information they get.
Well, Mark, one of the things that's noticeable after this jobs report data and some of that wage data is the U.S. dollar has kind of taken it on the chin, which has spiked things up in the commodity sector. Gold's up nicely today. Silver's up even more. Platinum, palladium, copper. So we've seen that reaction. But we were talking off mic, and we mentioned that the dollar's not in a vacuum, that it's actually buoyed against a lot of these other currencies that have been ripping higher. And since you're really our currency expert, I'd love to get your thoughts on what's happening in the U.S. dollar and what's happening in those other currencies, which is causing the commodity sector to run higher.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Chad. The dollar has been under pressure, and it fell further on this jobs report. Give you an example, the euro is up now 10 out of the past 11 days, which gets translated, same thing for the dollar index, being down 10 out of the past 11 sessions. So there has been some pressure on the dollar the last 2 weeks. And I think this is one of the factors. Just, you know, people see a weaker dollar, they think buy commodities. And I think that when you translate that idea into the currency space, those currencies that have done the best this past 2 weeks, is the Australian and New Zealand dollar. In fact, the New Zealand dollar is up almost 5%, and the Aussie is up about 4.5% just in these 2 weeks. So I know you see this also in some of the emerging markets that are commodity intensive, like South Africa.
Mark, what does that mean then? Why are some of these other commodities outperforming the U.S. dollar? Big picture for the U.S. dollar, too, is it hasn't fully broken down, right? The dollar was actually in an uptrend after it bottomed in late May. So a bit of weakness here has really put that whole uptrend in question. But why is the dollar starting to underperform after a few-month run here?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's kind of interesting what's happened. I think that's a bit of a buy the rumor, sell the fact. What rumor were we buying? I think we were buying the rumor that the Federal Reserve is going to taper later this year. And when the dollar essentially tops just around the same time that those July FOMC minutes came out confirming that a majority of Fed officials see tapering before the end of the year. So I think you have that on one hand. On the other hand, it's like a win-win proposition. So if the Fed if the Fed's going to taper, that helps the dollar. On the other hand, once it's priced in, dollar weakens. But also, if you think about with the spread of COVID, and I see more countries reintroducing different types of social restrictions, I think Alberta might be next. I think that means people take away from that, that they can still go with these risk appetites, risk on, pro-growth, because on the margins, it means that central banks are going to continue to provide stimulus. So I think that's part of the story. And those countries that look like they can raise rates before the Federal Reserve, and two come to mind, that major countries that are likely to raise rates starting this month and early next month, Norway, which is the third strongest currency over these past 2 weeks, and New Zealand. Remember, New Zealand passed, the RBNZ passed on hiking rates last month because they were just introducing a new lockdown because of COVID. But the economic data is such that I think that probably when they meet again, which is early October.
Yeah, Mark, I think you're onto something there. Couldn't it just be that some of the other central banks and other countries that have been quicker to hike their rates and move that direction ahead of the Fed, they're the currencies that have strengthened? And are they in danger of needing to reverse course as well? And could this all reverse on itself? Or is the Fed just behind the curve here and behind other countries in, you know, its ability to do a rate hiking cycle?
Yeah, I mean, you made a good point. So I think that you look at the strongest currencies, like I mentioned, New Zealand, Aussie. The weakest currencies are those that are going to be clearly lagging behind the Federal Reserve, and that's the Bank of Japan and the Swiss National Bank. So this week, the Swiss franc is the only major currency that have lost ground against the dollar, and the yen has the smallest gain. And, you know, we're talking about it's really small moves here, but the Aussie and Kiwi outperformed, yen and Swiss franc underperform. And then that puts these other currencies, like we know that the ECB meets next week, and they're unlikely to be hawkish, even though they had that high inflation print, 3%, highest in many years. But they're still reluctant to really tighten monetary policy. And on their own QE, they're likely to kick the can down and make the decision in December. And the euro is really also an underperformer. Sounds weird to say this, but the euro is up about 0.8%, and it's among the weakest of the major currencies against the dollar this week.
So, Mark, final comment then back to Shad's point there on commodities, too. Commodities are doing well today, and even gold and silver, those are up. Those are outperforming the rest of the commodity complex. But again, gold's up to, let's say, 1830, 1831, still a little bit below those highs that we saw just back in July. So really, gold's just continuing to trade in its range, now just at the upper part of its range. Very similar to silver, too. What's your takeaway from commodities? Do you see another substantial up leg from here, maybe as we turn the corner into fall for commodities, or is there more that needs to happen?
I think for me, two big things for commodities, as we talked, one is the direction of the dollar. But more the macro picture, it looks like, you know, we've had beginning of September, you get the high frequency data and the first data that come out for the previous month, of course, are survey data. And the purchasing managers indexes for almost every country was lower than expected or were revised down from the flash estimates. China fell below 50 at the boom bust level. The Japanese and Australia remain below the 50 boom bust level. I think Japan is the only G7 country below that 50 boom bust level. Germany's numbers were revised down. France was revised down. I'd say if there's a surprise, it was Italy, who their composite actually rose. But so to me, part of the commodity story is going to come from greater confidence in world growth. And unfortunately, primarily because of COVID, it looks like world growth slowed in August.
All right, Mark, we'll wrap it up here. I appreciate always your time on Friday recapping really what we saw this week. And it was a pretty slow and boring week until today, Friday, on the back of this jobs data. And now next week, hey, let's see a couple of those key aspects to watch for. And also it's after Labor Day. So let's see if we do finally get any breaks, especially in the terms of some of these ranges that especially commodities have traded in, and also considering that U.S. markets have just kept moving higher. Mark, great chatting with you, buddy. We'll chat again next week. Have a great long weekend.
Thanks. Good luck, guys.